Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley and I am joined tonight for a very special discussion of Unbreakable by the birthday boy, Adam Risky.
I'm 33.
Happy birthday, Adam Risky.
Thanks, buddy.
He's here to talk M. Night Shyamalan's Unbreakable on his birthday. Such is his commitment to sad superhero movies.
Yeah, if you're listening to this podcast in the morning, don't be confused. It's still nighttime.
We're going to be talking Unbreakable in just a few moments, probably with spoilers. So if you've never seen it, I guess it's a 15-year-old movie. Go ahead and watch it. It's on Netflix Instant Streaming as of this recording. Mm-hmm. Watch it, come back, listen to the show. But before we talk about Unbreakable, Adam Risky, by the way, it's going to be such a chore for me. Every time I say the title, not to go Unbreakable. Have you watched Kimmy Schmidt?
No, I haven't. No, I was guessing that was an Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt
it is.
Reference.
That's the theme song, and I love it. So, Adam Risky, have you seen anything good lately?
Yeah, I've seen a few things. The first thing I saw, well, I'll get some of the not so good stuff out of the way. But I wrote a review for this, so I'll just touch on it briefly. But I did see Tomorrowland.
You did?
I saw it in IMAX. If you're going to see the movie, see it in IMAX, because
okay.
It's very visually cool, and it's almost worth going to just to see a movie in IMAX that's not in 3D.
Yes, that is the appeal.
Doesn't happen all that
right,
often.
Right, right, right.
What a bummer. It was a real disappointing movie.
I haven't seen it yet. I read your review, and I thought, well, I don't have to rush out to see it.
No, you don't. I mean, like, it definitely feels like, in counterpoint to your Poltergeist review, Tomorrowland is a movie I would love to see remade.
Sure, okay.
Like, yeah, right, yeah, away. Yeah, it's right. Such a good idea.
Right.
And the thing that's just so frustrating about the movie, more so like in the second act and third act, is that they don't do anything with Tomorrowland. So you'll have some jetpacks and you'll have some flying machines and things
right.
like that, but then, like, it's just a bunch of people talking in rooms with, like, LCD projection. I mean, it's...
Yeah, the future. Hello!
It's like watching the scene with the architect in The Matrix Reloaded for 2 hours. It's really deflating.
I don't want to lay... I haven't seen the movie, and I don't want to lay all the blame at the feet of Damon Lindelof, although I know that seems to already be happening. But it does seem like kind of a trend in his work, where it's like, hey, interesting ideas that just are not executed in the least.
No. I mean, they're just not cinematic at all. Or, like, it just is navel-gazing stuff that he might be interested in. Like, I'm going to spoil one line, because it doesn't mean anything.
Let me cover my ears.
It
is
doesn't
it like,
mean
hey,
anything.
Kid, welcome to Tomorrowland.
I wish. That would at least be cinematic and pulpy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, there's like one part where a character is kind of ranting about like everything that's wrong with Earth.
Yeah.
And why Tomorrowland is better and Bang. Stuff like that. And the people on Earth, they're just like, you have obesity and famine. How does that happen? And I was just like, what?
You burnt Earth.
I really, really laughed hard at that part, and people were looking around at me, and I was just like, what? I'm getting my nuggets of enjoyment wherever I can.
Dude,
out of this
Lindelof
thing.
Has to get that stuff off his chest.
Yes, and they have...
He's all like, magnets, how do they work?
I like it.
Yeah.
Judy Greer's in it for like 30 seconds.
That's a problem.
Yes.
That's a problem.
And when I saw she was in the cast, like, I'm a Greer head.
Of
like,
course.
I want to see more Judy Greer in movies. And the fact that you Greer tease me and then Greer take her away, like, how dare
Not cool.
thee?
Not cool at all.
I don't know. Yeah. She's beautiful. She looks like a greyhound race dog, but she's so hot.
I'm a fan. I'm with you. She makes everything better.
Yeah. And so can we talk about Poltergeist a little bit?
All right.
Okay. You're settling
halfway
in.
Through. I might decide I want to talk about Poltergeist, the
fine.
Trauma movie.
Okay. So isn't there like a line in the movie where she says like, "Who's my brave boy?"
Yeah.
That's the line, right?
But yeah, because then they have to pay it off, because that's what good screenwriting does. It sets up the thing in the first act and then pays every single thing off in the third.
So I'm not saying it's as good as Unbreakable, but I think Poltergeist might be a superhero origin story about Brave Boy.
About Brave Boy?
I think so.
Boy, does he take center stage in the Poltergeist remake. Griffin? Are you talking about Griffin?
Yeah, who lost the casting call to Griffin?
Some loaf of bread. Someone on Twitter said, like, hey, why did they rename the names? Like, what's wrong with Carol Ann? Why do we change it to Madison?
Yeah.
And listen, I agree with that sentiment. At the same time, I'm glad that they renamed these characters because it makes this even more a perfect time capsule of shitty 2015 where we're remaking Poltergeist badly and naming characters Madison.
Yeah.
I didn't like the movie. And it's a weird thing because there's movies like Tomorrowland where it's like, oh, there's these, and again, I haven't seen it. This is just what I'm gathering from what you've said about it. Like, there's interesting ideas, but it's a mess almost at its core, you know? Whereas Poltergeist, because it's following the beats of a good, successful movie, mm-hmm. isn't like that. It's the kind of movie where, like, I could sit here and point to 500 specific things that are wrong, but not like on a fundamental level beyond, hey, why did they do this? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I exactly know what you mean.
With Rob Zombie's Halloween, which people hate, there's fundamental issues that you can point to and say, mm-hmm. this is why this movie is messed up.
Yep.
Whereas with Poltergeist, and I started to do it in my review, and then I was like, well, this doesn't work because these are such specific references that if you haven't seen the movie, none of this means anything. Mm-hmm. But there were so many things that I didn't like, including even the reveal. Okay, so the reveal of, and I mentioned this in the review, about the bodies being built on a cemetery. And then they do that line. It's like, oh, at least it's not of a Native American burial ground.
If you can't tell, Patrick just did that because they went to Sylvester Stallone's house, apparently.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
That was a good
Stallone. So I hated that line. And then later, they say, like, but they move the bodies, and another character's just like, probably not. And that's how that is dealt with, by a character being like, no, they probably didn't.
All right.
Oh, all right. Good reveal. Hashtag, this house is clean.
I got to check off a short list of grievances with Poltergeist.
I have a long list.
Real quick. Just some stuff that hasn't been addressed in reviews enough or at all. One is the girl playing the teenager, the teenage daughter.
She wants a phone.
Is she just doing a Kristen Stewart impression? Because it reminded me a lot of, like, pre-Twilight Kristen Stewart action.
I don't want to speak ill of the dead. The daughter, the oldest daughter in the first Poltergeist, is, like, a little bit worthless. And it's sad that then she died after the fact. But this movie somehow made her even more worthless and irritating on top of it.
Yep.
Sorry.
Number two. All right. Why did they not seem all that concerned about their daughter going missing? They seemed pretty blasé about it.
And also very confident that they were going to get her back. Like, well, we just have to get her back.
Yes.
Like, what?
Yes, exactly. Like,
because I think they had seen the first Poltergeist, and they knew that she was in the in-between.
Crazy, crazy stuff just happened to your kid, and they're just treating it like the Comcast guy's 2 hours late. It's ridiculous. And what you call it? All right, so they bring up how, you know, they're gonna go to these paranormal people who work at, like, a college to get their daughter back.
Right.
Just, they don't set it up at all. There's no context to it. They set up the ghost hunter guy, but they don't set up, like, the paranormal people who actually bring in the ghost hunter guy later. But Rosemary DeWitt's got a line of dialogue where she's just like, oh, yeah, those are those weird people from when I was in college.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, she just remembers back to her day that there was a paranormal investigation, like it's Peter Venkman and Ray Stantz and shit, like, we're at their college, and, oh, that's who I'm going to go to just in case this should happen to my daughter.
And this is the... she went to them after the daughter was missing, right? She doesn't go before.
Yeah.
So this is the phenomenon of Independence Day, where Randy Quaid starts talking about the last time he was abducted and everyone rolls their eyes. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, alien ships are flying overhead. Like, now's the time where we listen to Randy Quaid. And so for her to be like, oh, these weird people, it's like, no, clearly they know something you don't.
Yeah.
Because your daughter was taken by ghosts. And the whole paranormal, the whole hashtag "This house is clean" drives me crazy, because it's like, how do we modernize Poltergeist? We make him a reality star, right? Yeah, and again, I talked about this in the review. So he set up very early on, the oldest daughter is like a fan of his show. And so the only reason you do that is so that in Act 3, when we need him to come on the scene, is so that the daughter says, like, oh, wait, I just thought of someone who might be able to help us.
Yeah.
But they don't do that. Instead, it's just like, oh, yeah, we know a guy, and it just happens to be that guy. I don't understand why they need to modernize. Like, it's not okay for him to just be a medium. He has to be this reality show star. So they got to modernize that aspect. But we can still have the paranormal research department at the college. Like, that outdated concept doesn't need to be brought up to 2015, but the medium does, absolutely.
And again, the teenage daughter is still really jazzed that the paranormal guy from TV is there. Her sister is missing!
But he's kind of famous.
But he's a famous guy's there. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you stick around for the post-credits cookie?
Yeah, because this guy in the fucking aisle wouldn't, like, move. So I had
But it's further evidence.
I darted, like, after, like, the first credit popped up.
But it's further evidence of this movie's inability to know what it is, because it goes out on this dumb laugh that...
And I saw it in 3D, so fuck my life.
For real?
Yeah.
Yikes.
It was the only time it was, like, playing when I was at the fucking mall theater.
It's really not good.
Yeah. They should. All right, it was a new theater. It's the Hawthorne 12. They should just fucking close it, because they already ruined it. They already ruined the theater by playing Poltergeist
there. Hashtag this theater is unclean.
Yeah, and they had, it was one of those dumbass theaters where they're like, let's put in a Lazy Boy for every seat.
Yeah.
And guess what? When you lean back in the Lazy Boy, the glass partition blocks the screen. So your theater's already fucked.
Oh, this is a disaster. Yeah.
What architect built that? Dare I ask? Anyways, next is I watched No, a documentary.
Yes,
which
on
is
Netflix.
On Netflix. It's a documentary about Doc Ellis, who was a pitcher for the Pittsburgh Pirates in the 70s.
I will take your word for it.
If you are a baseball fan, Mike Pomero, Adam Thaus, Heath Holland, you should probably watch it. It's fine. It's okay. It's a decent documentary. Whatever. But anyways, like in the trailer, they built it up to be about a guy who it was going to be. I thought it was going to be like a documentary version of For the Love of the Game, except the twist is he pitched his no-hitter while high on LSD.
Oh.
And I was like, that's kind of interesting.
Sure.
That's five minutes of the movie.
Was the Kevin Costner character not on LSD in For Love of the Game?
No, he was just on, like...
Was Kelly Preston on
Jesus
LSD?
Juice? I don't know.
Who was on LSD in that movie? I remember it factoring in prominently.
John C. Reilly.
That's what it was.
Yeah,
okay.
That's why he caught everything demonstrably.
I haven't seen that movie in a long time.
I haven't seen the whole thing of it ever, actually.
Oh, I saw that in the theater, baby.
Nice. I remember it came out the same day as Blue Streak, and I made the...
Saw that in the theater, too?
I made the choice to see Blue Streak.
Is that all 99?
Yeah.
99, baby.
Once I saw in the preview that it was another movie where Martin Lawrence goes like, woo-coo-coo-coo! I gotta see it. Opening day. Here's my money. Yeah, so the thing that was kind of interesting, all right, so this Doc Ellis guy, he's supposed to be, in his own words, he's like, I was the Muhammad Ali of baseball. It's like, you know what? I follow baseball quite a bit. You probably just think you were the Muhammad Ali of baseball. Yeah. But it's really just like about his life and like how he was a horrible drug addict. And then like, then he cleaned himself up at the end of his life. And then it's like, whatever. But the thing that was interesting about the movie is about drugs in baseball. And that's 5-10 minutes of the movie. They talked about how a lot of players in the 60s used these things called greenies, which were like caffeine pills.
Okay.
And it would give you like the boost of drinking like 20 cups of coffee. And between that and pitching 90-mile-per-hour fastballs on LSD, you would think somebody would have died.
Yeah, right.
Like, and they never address any of that stuff, so it's just such a missed opportunity of a documentary. But if you're Mike Pomero, Adam Thaus, or Heath Holland, or a baseball fan, I would recommend it because it's no worse than anything you would see on, like, a 30 for 30 for ESPN. It's
all right.
Fine.
All right.
I saw Pretty in Pink for the first time.
Interesting.
It's the Casino to 16 Candles as Goodfellas.
Okay.
Ducky is annoying.
I don't love 16 Candles, so I would almost
prefer... You don't
love 16 Candles? No, I would almost prefer Pretty in Pink. But okay. I recognize that it's not very good.
Yeah, I thought that... Okay, so Molly Ringwald, I'm not a big fan of hers.
Sure.
She looks like SpaghettiOs and she's very severe.
Severe SpaghettiOs, I got it.
Yeah,
All right.
and she's good in it. Andrew McCarthy is charming.
Okay.
Harry Dean Stanton is really good in it.
All right.
It's
Spader walks away with that movie.
I didn't get that, but
Oh no, Spader.
he's doing a Spader
Yeah.
thing, which is fine.
No,
If
he's
you like
doing
Spader, then you it's like good. Yeah, but
he's full Spader in that
he's
movie.
way
He's at
Spader.
the height of his Spaders.
Yeah, so I don't know. It was whatever. It was like I like romantic dramas, so I mean like that's good.
Were you distracted by Andrew McCarthy's wig at the end of the movie?
I didn't know about that until later.
Oh,
I
when you
was
were watching it, were you like, is
I
something
was
wrong? Is Blaine
no
sick?
no
No?
I didn't I
You
missed
did
it.
not even notice it.
I didn't notice it.
But now you know about it.
Now I know about it
Please
'cause I
watch
read
it
about
again,
it. Okay.
and you will say, how could I have missed this?
Yeah.
Because it is insane.
I think it's interesting that it's a romantic drama where, or just a romance in general. It could be a romantic comedy and it wouldn't matter. But like this is a couple that is not going to make it at all.
No.
Like this couple will last a little
Like
while.
a few weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they devoted a whole movie
Yeah.
towards this. But
Yeah.
I do like the whole thing because I know John Hughes was like, well, I wanted her to get together with Ducky. But
Right.
the studio forced me to get have her get together with Blaine.
Both endings are wrong. For real.
Yeah.
The movie should have ended with her being happy being alone.
The only thing I liked about it
Or
was
with
it.
Spader.
Oh my God, that'd be great. If he's just like, yeah, Spader like accidentally falls in love with her
Yeah.
and then he
He
sings.
kind of already is in love with her. Like
Yeah.
it's hinted that
Yeah.
he like is mad that he can't have her.
Yeah. But Pretty in Pink, you know,
Pretty
if
in
you haven't seen
Pink.
it by now, you're not missing
No, you're fine.
anything.
You're fine. Speaking of Brat Pack movies,
Yes.
sometime in August, the second Tuesday in August, I wish I had the date right in front of me, I will be hosting the Breakfast Club at the Elk Grove Cinema in Elk Grove Village, Illinois, a suburb of Chicago. If you live in Chicago, please come out. If you don't, please fly out. Come see me host the Breakfast Club.
I will be there.
Thank you.
I am looking forward to it. Your post-screening discussions are very fun to listen to. It's
Thank
like
you.
a live podcast,
It is
guys.
almost,
It's
isn't it?
pretty great. Yeah.
Except I don't have any control over who the co-hosts are.
Yeah. And you get to see SpaghettiOs projected on 35
It won't be 35. It'll be a
digital
DLP, sadly. But
DLP.
you know, SpaghettiOs. It's
Yeah.
like, uh-oh, SpaghettiOs. I watched a documentary that you saw last year. It's interesting that some of last year's Chicago Critics Film Festival titles are just now being kind of released. And I remember you talking about it when you saw it, but I finally saw That Guy, Dick Miller.
Oh, where? How did you see it?
It's
'Cause
out on like iTunes
oh, is it?
and
Okay.
Amazon now, so I rented it just on VOD.
Yeah.
And it's the phenomenon that we have been talking about. You spoke about it, I think, last week, this idea of a documentary that you enjoy because you like what it's about, but you recognize that the way that it's about it is not very good.
Yeah.
The movie has no real focus. It doesn't really have anything to say.
Yep.
It's just,
It's a fan doc.
here's Dick Miller, and
Yeah.
boy, did he make a lot of movies.
Yeah.
And, you know, he worked with Roger Corman a lot. He worked with Joe Dante a lot as a huge fan of both of them. Of course, I enjoyed the movie. It's all clips from movies I like and talking heads that I like. But at one point, it just starts talking about Joe Dante movies. And it's like, I understand that the two of them are friends and that Dick Miller is in all of them, but you can't just start talking about, like, here's what's good about Joe Dante movies if your movie's about Dick Miller. And I know you had said you saw it at the Chicago Critics Film Festival last year, and Dick Miller was there
He was.
and
He
kind of.
was not a good. I'm going to be generous. Like, I was really mad the night that I went because it was one of those post-screening Q&As where you could tell that the entertainer is just not a very chatty person.
Right.
So the MCs were doing what they could with trying to get him to expand upon stories and stuff. But like, it was just one of those kind of deflating things where sometimes an actor just treats everything like it's a job. Like, there's no special quality to him starring in, was it Rock and Roll High School or him
Right.
starring in
Right.
Gremlins or Bucket of Blood? It was just like, well, I needed a job and I, you know, had a wife to support. It's like, that's a fantastic story, Dick Miller. It's like, maybe they should have named this movie That Dick Dick Miller.
So I recognize that that makes for a disappointing Q&A because the answers are not interesting. They're basically like yes or no answers.
Yeah.
But that I remember you telling me that, and that was in my head as I watched the documentary because I was thinking like that's actually a more interesting documentary where it's Dick Miller coming at it from the perspective of I'm a working actor. And these are the choices that I made in order to keep working.
Yeah.
These were jobs to me. But it never, there's almost no take on any of it. It's just, here are movies that he made. And then he was in this and then he was in this and he can talk fast. And again, I enjoyed it because I like all the people and I liked, you know, his dynamic with his wife, like in the modern day interviews, I think they were funny together.
Yeah. His wife was at the, memory serves, she was there at the post-screening Q&A, and I think she was more of a better storyteller than he was. It was, she kind of saved him a little bit, but he just seemed very disinterested, and that coupled with the movie being a little underwhelming, because I was coming out of South by Southwest that year, it had gotten good buzz. They were saying that it was a fun.
Well, again, we all just have so much affection for Dick Miller and all these movies that he was in that were just like, this is fun, this is great, but it's okay, you know?
Yeah.
It's, if you're a fan of those things, you can watch it, but it's hardly a great, possibly not even a good documentary.
I'm glad that you enjoyed it.
Sure.
To a certain point.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I took my son the other day because there's a theater near here that's doing once a week repertory screenings of Muppet movies. And so we saw the Muppet Caper.
What theater is doing that?
The Marcus Theater in Addison.
Okay.
On the weekends. And we missed the Muppet movie, sadly, and saw the Great Muppet Caper. And as a kid, that was my favorite of the Muppet movies, I guess because I was into all like the jewel heist stuff.
Uh-huh.
And it made me think of like as a kid, Return of the Jedi was my favorite, and that was wrong because that's not the best movie.
Yeah.
And The Great Muppet Caper is not the best Muppet movie by far. It's way too long. There's a long section in the middle that like becomes a Busby Berkeley movie for too long, and that's fun. Hey, they're doing an homage to but like it goes on and on and on. There's about four songs too many that are love songs between Kermit and Piggy. Charles Grodin is a lot of fun. I mean, Diana Rigg is fun. There's really good jokes. I mean, again, as a kid, you didn't realize how many of the jokes were really just for the adults. So I still enjoyed the movie, and it was fun to see it through him, but it's not nearly as good a movie as I remember it being.
Okay.
While still being like a fun, good movie. You know?
So this was the first time you'd seen it probably since you were an adolescent?
I feel like I watched it a couple of years ago, but it must have gone over my head. I don't know. But the whole time I was thinking about, there was this podcast that I used to listen to in like 2008, 2009, and it doesn't exist anymore. And I don't even necessarily want to call it out by name, but
do it.
It was called Movie Junkies.
Okay.
And I cannot find it anymore. And I've tried. I'm just trying to find old episodes.
Is that the one about the net that you mentioned?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Sweet. You need to shout that out.
It was the worst. Like, it was people talking about movies, same as us, but they had crazy opinions, like they'd only seen 10 movies. So the Great Muppet Caper was the one guy who knew the least about movies, but was also sort of the host, so you know, like me. The Great Muppet Caper was his favorite movie of all time, and no movie could ever come close to The Great Muppet Caper. So they just had these, like, I remember they did an episode, like, this would have been early 2009. What are the movies that we're looking forward to most this year, right? And we had, I think, Star Trek that year, and we had Inglourious Basterds, and Watchmen, maybe. I don't know. A bunch of stuff came out that year, right?
And I remember Proposal.
The Proposal. The first movie that someone named was The Fourth Kind. And I was like, well, that's not where I would have gone. And they, the thing Adam's referencing is there was a show about their favorite movies of the 90s. And it was like, okay, you go first. All right, number five, The Net. And I was like, what am I listening to? And I could not get enough of it. I was obsessed with how bad they were at talking about movies.
I
loved it.
Yeah, I have a few of those. Not podcasts per se, but just like
well, you have that
sports
YouTube
radio
shows.
Okay.
Well,
oh, wait a minute. Yeah,
you are way
thing.
Into horrible
I'm,
YouTube
I'm
shows.
Way, I, one thing about me is beginning around like December, January of this year, I've gotten so deep in the trenches of YouTube film criticism. There's one guy who's like younger than me. He's like in his mid 20s and all he talks about is like working out and just like he's a total bro face. And I can't get enough. I cannot get enough of this guy. Like I'm almost, he sells t-shirts. I'm almost tempted to like buy a t-shirt from him so I can get a shout out.
If there was a movie junkie shirt, I would buy
it. Yeah. So I mean like, oh God, it's just so great. And, yeah, I'll tip this much. I'll tip this much. He calls his bedroom the Flick Cave.
Oh my God.
Because he's obsessed with Batman, so he calls it the Flick Cave.
He calls movies flicks. Like,
yeah. Well, his name is Flickinger.
Oh.
He's a very likable personality.
For real?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like that's why I keep watching it. Like he's
my inclination is to want him to never stop fucking off.
Yeah.
But if you say he's okay.
No, he's okay. And
the Flick Cave though.
But
come on.
Yeah, the Flick Cave's a little bit much. But I mean like yeah, I've gotten deep into like it started
that
with Screen
like a
Junkies.
Nickname for a vagina.
It started with Screen Junkies. It went to Chris Stuckman. It went to the Flick Pick. It went to fucking God,
isn't there one with
name?
A little kid that you watch?
Oh yeah, Lights Camera Jackson. You need to watch Lights Camera Jackson on YouTube.
That sounds like a Disney show, doesn't it?
Can
like,
I do my Lights Camera Jackson impression?
Please do.
All right, so
what else are we here for?
give me a line. Give just like a movie and an opinion about a movie. Just give me
something.
Oh,
okay. I saw Poltergeist this weekend and I felt like it was underwhelming.
I saw Poltergeist this weekend and it was dynamite entertainment for the summer. It's such a good movie and you could watch it with your mom, your dad. It's fantastic. He's like an 11-year-old Gene Shalit. It's just like, I can't get a fucking enough of it. It's amazing. But anything
but he has
like
some degree of celebrity. Because
yeah, he won a New York Emmy. He won a New York Emmy. And he's just like, I don't like Inception. He's like, it's muddled and I did not understand it. But, no, and then I'm watching anything on YouTube. Like, if there's a fucking guy with a backwards cap just trying to be a regular guy talking to me about movies, I will watch it. I will watch it. I've been so tempted to tell Patrick, I'm like, we need to get a YouTube show, like a fucking for real YouTube show, like just make it as douchey as possible. And like, it'll be an in joke to like our fan base, but like to everybody else, they think that's what it is.
I will do it only if it's strictly unboxing videos. Like I got
they do
this
unboxing on the Flick Pick. They do the geek. They have all these like they don't. They're too young to know how to put in sponsor stuff without it seeming completely phony. So they're just like, yeah, I got this Geek Fuel box, and inside of it, there's like you could tell that they're disappointed when they open the box, but they're just like, there's fucking lenticular stickers. And it's a shirt of, it says, I suck cocks, but I don't, but it's in, every cock is an Avenger. It's a different Avenger. It's a picture of Nick Fury shoving a maw in his mouth.
That's a weird bit of marketing, isn't it?
It's weird, but they're just like, oh, I got these nerds, and if I shake them up, yeah, just sounds good. Like they're just really just it's improvisation at its most desperate. I love it. Yeah, and I before we go to Unbreakable though, unless I have
two more movies.
I have one more I want to talk about.
Yeah.
after your two.
I'll go fast real quick. I just want to say if any of you enterprising internet people can find the archive of Movie Junkie, please email it to fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com because I've literally looked for it before because I'm so sad that it's gone because I love it. I rewatched Blade Runner. Are you a Blade Runner fan?
Yeah. It took me a few tries, but okay. I've become a big fan of Blade Runner.
Do you have a specific cut that you prefer?
The ultimate cut.
Okay. I feel like I should like that one, but that one's the most on the nose about the Deckard as a replicant stuff. And
yeah.
I need
that.
I don't really like that angle. I don't think that actually works for the movie. So okay. I went in between and I went 92 director's cut.
Okay.
I've been driving around in my car listening to nothing but the Vangelis score to Blade Runner.
Oh, sweet.
I'm kind of obsessed with the movie right now and I watched it and it's every bit as good as I remember. Holy shit, that's a good movie. And I listened to The Canon with Devin Faraci and Amy Nicholson and they both are not fans of that movie and that's fine. Again,
it's kind of polarizing.
Everyone's, you know, the world is a
there's a lot of
everyone's
that's
a snowflake.
That's one of those movies though that is just I think it's pretty easy to get its greatness if you give it a chance. Like,
I do too.
But if somebody were to tell me that they don't really dig it, like, I can completely get why they won't like Blade Runner. It's very cold. So if you're not into something like cold sci-fi.
But see, I don't even agree that it is cold, because I think if you look at the Rutger Hauer stuff, like, that is not cold at all. That is a dude who fucking loves life and wants to live.
Yeah.
Like, that's not cold at all. I don't know. But I love that movie, and oh my God, it's amazing. And then finally, I watched Buzzard, finally, because it was tipped off in the comments under your review that it showed up on Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. And so I watched it and was fascinated by it, and then reread your review and agreed with so much of it that, like, oh, that middle section does not work, where he's hanging out with the friend, and it was...
It's very Napoleon Dynamite.
That's exactly what it was reminding me of, and when I reread your review, I was like, oh, he calls that out. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. But the first... stuff is real interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The last stuff is interesting. I'm not even positive I get it. I can't say that I love where it goes, because I think it's kind of easy.
Yeah, I don't think I get the last shot.
No, I definitely don't.
I really don't know what he's going for there.
No,
but
I definitely don't, but I didn't care.
But when he uses the Freddy Krueger hand for the first time, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, I was really happy the movie kind of went there, because it was building up to that, and then it did. And it's just something that's so... I don't know. Like, I feel like that's what some of those people who go to those horror conventions or horror marathons are kind of like. And I like want to kind of get into their brain and figure out what takes them tick sometimes.
Well, and I had watched The Gambler last week or the week before and did not care for it, and was actually texting back and forth with you about, like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And apologies to Chaby, who I love, but who said he just saw it and he loved it.
Yeah.
I thought Buzzard was a much more interesting and less predictable portrait of somebody willfully self-destructing than The Gambler was, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So thanks for turning me on to that, because that was interesting. That's on Amazon Prime streaming right now, everyone.
It's always rewarding when we can call attention to, like, a little movie that you wouldn't hear about. So I'm happy about that.
Yeah, yeah.
So every year I've got a birthday movie. This year I've seen pretty much everything I wanted to in theaters, so I chose to roll the dice on an old favorite.
All right.
I watched Miami Vice again today.
Okay.
And here's the thing with Miami Vice.
Was it really an old favorite? Did you used to like it?
I used to always be intrigued by it.
Okay.
And then I would rewatch it every, like, 2-3 years because I just couldn't get enough of it.
Okay.
And I still can't get enough of it.
I love that movie.
I really love that movie, and I think I know why you love that movie.
Because it's awesome?
Well, besides that.
Because of Gong Li? Because that's not why.
Who is the Chinese Michelle Pfeiffer, according to Mark on? Because Mark were talking about Gong Li while I was watching it.
Yeah.
And I said, I was like, hey, Mark, guess why Gong Li likes Colin Farrell so much?
Why?
Because he delivers loads. Anyways, I think that you like that movie because you were... born in Portugal, but you got your tan in Miami.
Correct.
I think you're a fiend for mojitos.
Is there anything grosser than watching Colin Farrell dance in that movie?
He looks like a Saint Bernard.
I love that movie, though.
Yeah, I do
really
too.
Do.
The only thing, the reason why I think it didn't do well, and it kind of is...
There's a lot of reasons.
One of the reasons is because I think people were expecting it to be Bad Boys. And it's not.
Boy, no, it's not.
It's like the not fun version of Bad Boys, but I love how it just... Oof.
Do you know the story behind that, though? Like, they basically had to rewrite the third act on the fly. Like, the third act is just...
Wasn't there, like, a war going on or, like, some kind of intern...
Yeah, it was super
skirmish,
dangerous,
yeah.
And Jamie Foxx was like, I'm not staying here. I'm not going. And so they're like, okay, then we have to make this guy the bad guy, and this is our final shootout. Like, none of that was planned. There was a whole third act that they had to scrap, basically, and rewrite on the fly. I still think the movie works, although
I do too.
I would argue that the explosion is
terrible. Yeah,
and he
really
100% repeats that same explosion in Black Hat and like shoots it the same bad way.
Yeah, it's
you have a
not
character
a good
too
explosion.
Close in the foreground, and it's embarrassing. But everything else about that movie is sweet.
Yeah, it's good. I like the score a lot.
Oh my gosh, yes.
I think that's super good. And then I really, if anybody wants to send me a birthday present, care of at this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to go fast boat.
I will say, I don't like that. You watched the director's cut, I assume?
I just watched the theatrical one. It was Cinemax On Demand.
Oh, yeah. Hello.
Hi, Ivory Tower.
I prefer the director's cut, except for the opening sequence, because in the director's cut, there's a whole opening on the go-fast boats, where there's like a race and they get off. The theatrical cut just opens in that club,
yeah,
and it's awesome.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
That is such a great opening, and it bums me out that that is not the opening of the director. Everything else about the director's cut I prefer,
yeah,
except for that opening. I miss that opening.
I'm surprised that James Cameron never got his hold on that one woman who shoots the neo-Nazi guy in the head.
Yeah,
she has that
right?
Speech.
Yeah.
Because she's just badass.
Well, yeah, and she definitely has a Jeanette, what's her name, vibe.
Yeah.
What does Lights, Camera, Jackson think of Miami Vice?
I did not understand all the crossovers and double dealings in Miami Vice. I thought it was wet noodle soup. I did not enjoy it.
What is a good cop movie, Lights, Camera, Jackson?
I just saw Armed and Dangerous. And I think that it is a rich man's Miami Vice. It's funny. It's relatable. And it's something you can enjoy with the whole family. On the LCJ report card, I give it 3 thumbs up and a twist.
He has the LCJ report card. Yeah. We're doing everything wrong. We're literally doing that. Dude is gonna like have a career.
Yeah.
What are we? We're wasting our lives.
I hope you know he crushes ass too. He's just like. I bet you he goes to Miami, just throws a $100 bill, and he's just like, I want 2 Bacardi mojitos, mommy.
Let's talk about Unbreakable.
Yeah.
This is a movie that Mike Pomero loves, so I should give a shout out to Mike Pomero.
Yeah,
he's
Mike.
All about the Unbreakable.
Mike.
Again, like
Mike.
I said, we're going to be spoiling Unbreakable. If you haven't seen it, go ahead and watch it. It was an interesting thing when the movie came out because it comes out on the heels of The Sixth Sense, which is this enormous phenomenon, and it seems like almost immediately we start getting trailers,
yep,
for M. Night's new movie, and the trailer gives away nothing. It's just that long scene of the doctor talking to Bruce Willis, saying there was this horrible train wreck, everybody died except for you, you don't have a scratch on you. Boom. Unbreakable. What is this movie about?
It's one of the most misleading trailers ever.
100% it is, because everyone coming off The Sixth Sense and seeing that trailer assumes, oh, this is another kind of supernatural. Like,
mm-hmm.
I think it got people into the theater.
Yeah.
Because A, they liked his last movie, and B, they wanted to see, like, okay, so what is going on?
Yeah. Why did he survive that crash? Why was he completely unharmed when everybody else got killed? What is up? What is the mystery?
And then instead, people turned on the movie, I think. The audience I saw it in.
Yes.
Turned on the movie.
I saw it opening night, and they didn't turn like they turned with The Village type turn.
Well,
but from the opening, before any shots are shown in this movie, they have the opening crawl where they show
statistics
about comic books.
That's right.
And if you just saw the trailers leading up to it and did not know anything from reading reviews or hearing production stories about this movie being related to comic books in any way, which is how I went into it, you would be like, what the fuck is this all about?
Yeah.
It seems very just out of context. Like, how does this fit in? And at the time, in 2000, I thought, and I don't think this anymore, but I was dumber back then. I thought comics were very silly. So, like, when I saw these stats about comics, I was just like, I don't care. Like, this is stupid. Is this about comics? Like, what?
I am a comic book fan, yeah, and I certainly was more so then. And I now know what the movie is and what it's about, and I've seen it several times. I still think those stats are kind of stupid. All they do is tell you this is going to be about superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
But the stats themselves don't actually do anything.
No.
For the movie, except to set up this idea that maybe that it's going to be about superheroes. But I don't think those work.
I think they're interesting. I didn't know those stats.
Okay.
But
so, you know, I mean, I don't know.
It it doesn't break anything for me. Well,
I didn't even
try for that one.
Lights, Camera, Jackson.
Oh, my God. Lights, Camera, Risky.
You punny son of a bitch. The movie's kind of ahead of its time, right?
Yeah.
Because within a few years...
Way ahead of its time.
Right. Within a few years, we get all these comic book movies, and here's a movie that's dealing with a lot of that same stuff before anybody else. And I feel like Had the movie come out?
Yeah. Just X-Men. I think X-Men was 2000 July.
Okay, and this was 2000
but
November.
But it was like that first year where like it started right. to turn.
Yeah. Right. I feel like if the movie had come out 5 or 10 years later, it might actually have been even better received, although people liked that at the time, critics especially. Yeah. I feel like it might have been even better received, but I also think people would have said that it was made in response to the wave of comic book movies, that this was sort of a deconstructionist approach to that. And so I'm glad that it came out when it did so that it isn't called that, even though I do think he's still deconstructing certain things.
Yeah.
That's not... His goal wasn't to react to other superhero movies at all.
Right.
Which I like.
Yeah. I, the thing I really enjoy about Unbreakable now, so that's my answer to if I like it or not. I really, really like it.
Okay.
And that's not how it's been in the past. When the first time I saw it, I was very mixed on it. And then over the years, it's been one of those things where I've just felt like watching it again.
Yeah.
And this, before this recent rewatch, I hadn't seen it in probably 10 years. But this time when I watched it, I loved it.
Okay.
Like, I think I'm close to Mike's love of
it.
I really, really love it. And I think the reason why I love it so much is because it works as a drama just as much as a superhero commentary.
Okay.
And I think that it also works as like almost like a not a horror thriller, but like just kind of like a dark thriller.
Yeah.
Similar to how The Sixth Sense works as a dark thriller. And from 99 when Sixth Sense came out to 2004, right before The Village, I was a big Shamel head. I was like really into
They're
M.
called Shamel toes.
Oh my God. That's Touched by God Brilliant. By the way, Touched by God Brilliant. All right. I got to give kudos to the Mad Max Fury Road podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so JB was like channeling God, I thought. He was like really good.
That's not overstated.
It was a complete return to form for you.
So just kind of phoned in as usual, you mean?
You'll just you're not crackerjack entertainment some days, Patrick Brown. No, I'm just kidding. No, I thought it was a fantastic podcast.
Thank
you. I just
wanted
to let you know that.
Thanks.
Yeah. You take the floor. Take the wheel.
Here's my thing. I still think this is probably my favorite Shyamalan movie.
Okay.
I like it a lot. Watching it this time for this podcast, I had this thing. Sometimes we'll do a show. I think about when we did a show on Desperado, and I watched Desperado for the first time in a long time, and I was like, holy cow, this movie really works. This works and this works. This movie still plays.
Yeah.
This is so much fun, right? So maybe it's just a question of where the movie exists in my head when I come back to it, because Desperado, I was probably like, this isn't going to hold up. This is going to be very 90s. Robert Rodriguez has clearly lost his way. So this movie's not going to be as good as I remember it. Oh no, it turns out to be a lot of fun. And Unbreakable in my head is like, this movie's really, really good. And I go back to it. And it's not that it's not really, really good, but I found myself being, I think, overly critical because I was kind of looking for things to like talk about.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So I'm noticing things and I'm like, oh, that, why this? And does that totally work? And
well, throw me one.
Well, listen, we'll get to the ending, which has always been
a
complete disaster, a complete train wreck, if you will. Opens and closes with a train wreck.
Are you talking about the entire scene or just the post credits?
I think
text?
The scene is okay. I think where it lands is okay. Mm-hmm. I do think there was a little bit of him like needing to kind of have a twist, although I don't think it's as much as it was accused of in the day. I think in 2000, everyone's like, well, he just forces this dumb twist in there. And I don't think that's exactly what he was doing. It plays that way a little bit, but it has more to do with just like the title cards.
Okay. Yeah. The title cards are a big Law and Order.
I mean,
fuck you type of,
but disastrous
drop.
Because it ends the movie.
Yeah.
In such a way that
it's, you're laughing at a movie that you weren't laughing at.
It's a mess. And it's not that I wanted them, and it's not that I wanted the movie to remain open-ended.
Yeah.
Because once Bruce Willis finds out that information, it's not like he would have just been like, okay, I'm going to walk out, which is essentially what he does. It's just that we're told, like, well, he called the cops and this guy went to jail. And so it puts a button on it, but I almost feel like without the title cards, it would be so much stronger just to have that reveal and say, this is what it was kind of building towards.
I agree, because I mean it's something that you don't need to call out whatsoever, because you understand from, I think the character of David Dunn is so well developed that you know exactly what he's going to do at that point, that you don't need to, like you said, put like a button on it and everything. But
I want to come back to what you said about David Dunn being well developed, but
interesting.
I just
Okay.
want to say I read like the Wikipedia summary of the movie, and they talked about how Shyamalan originally wanted to do the traditional three act structure. The guy finds out he's a superhero. I'm guessing the Sam Jackson reveal would have happened in Act Two, and then in Act Three they have their showdown, and it's Iron Man. It's every Marvel movie basically, and so I think it's interesting that he didn't do that, and that the whole thing is essentially an origin story, right? And I'm okay with that. My problem is, once he decided to make the whole thing an origin story, he tries to squeeze in Act Two and Act Three in the span of a couple title cards. And that's what's disastrous to me. Like, if you're going to make it an origin story, just make it an origin story. You don't need to resolve things. I understand, like, this was before people were making half movies where it was like, we'll finish it up in the sequel. So he didn't know that there was going to be a sequel. He's talked about it for 15 years, and maybe it's going to happen. Who knows? But so when he made it, it's not like he designed it to have a sequel. But because of that, there's such an awkward finality to that last scene that I think it hurts the rest of the movie to an extent.
I don't think that it does. And the reason I think that is because I think the characters' arcs are wrapped up in a way that the whole movie to me, and the reason why it resonates with me so much, and I don't know if it was because I was drunk yesterday, but I cried when I watched it today.
Which scene? The scene with the son?
No.
Oh,
Well,
at
you
the
mean
end when he calls the cops?
at the end with the
Where he
son?
passes the newspaper? Because Mike always cries in that scene. Because Mike's a crybaby.
I tear
He
up during
cries
that
during
scene.
Friday the 13th, Part 7. I think because he loves it so
I
much.
heard he likes that a
You know,
lot.
that's his favorite one.
Yeah. I give this one on the
Four
Mike Pa
sleeping bags.
on the MP scorecard, I give Friday the 13th Part 7 an A plus plus.
I give it three Lar Park Lincolns and a Terry Kaiser.
I give it two lenticular stickers and a box of Nerds. So no, I cried at several scenes in Unbreakable in the second half, and
Unbreakable.
I will cry from laughter now. And it's because, all right, I'm a big softy too, and the reason why it Unbreakable affects me is because of the whole thing where did you wake up sad today? I've had many, many years of my life where I would say yes,
Sure.
I am sad every day
Sure.
to a certain extent. I might be the laughing clown, but I'm crying on the inside.
Sure.
But and not to be too revealing, but it's something that I get. There's certain times in your life where you feel like something's just not right. And the fact that Bruce Willis in the scene where, which I think is an incredible sequence when he saves the kids, I think it's great.
Yeah,
It's
yeah,
scare
I agree with
it's
that.
so like foreboding, and I think that's something that Shyamalan does like really well, is that's almost like a horror scene. Like
Yeah.
it's very scary, and like how frightening is it, just the line where it's like, I like your house, and all the implications of that.
Right.
I mean, like, that's terrifying. And the fact that the kids are like tied to the pipes, and a wife is tied to the pipe, and everything like that. It's just so freaky. But the fact that Bruce Willis is fulfilling a purpose, an emotional void in his life by, killing this guy, by saving these kids, it's, and then pushing the paper over to his son and show and saying, like, don't tell your mom, but yes, we have this unspoken connection, this unspoken bond where you know that I'm a superhero to you, and like, kids want to see their fathers as heroes in a certain way.
Yeah.
It just wrecked me.
Yeah.
It just really wrecked me. And I played a lot of beer pong yesterday.
No, I agree that that is a really good scene, and I really like the scene where he saves the people. The
So what I was just gonna say
Oh,
was,
I'm
I'm sorry.
sorry.
That's okay. I paused.
I thought you were done.
So the ending, the last scene,
Yeah.
works for me because I feel like that emotional arc it's almost like based off of a lie, which is so surprising with it because Sam Jackson's character is a terrorist.
Right.
So, like, in order for David Dunn to fulfill his purpose in life, it has to come at this grave consequence, which I think is really creepy, but really strong.
Okay.
And then I think also Samuel Jackson doesn't need anything else in his life at that point. He feels like he knows his place, and him being in the prison for the criminally insane, it's all well and good to him because he knows who he is.
I guess, but what... Why do you suppose discovering that he's the supervillain is fulfilling to him?
Because he's nuts. Like, it just is something okay, that, like...
but that's... I mean, that's...
it might be too easy of an
answer,
but... Yeah,
because he's not really nuts for the whole movie. He's right. You know what I mean? So,
well, the thing
to then at the end be like, oh, well, because he's crazy. Like, I don't think that...
Well, I also think it's an interesting... I think we just disagree on that one, but...
Okay.
Also, I think it's a good twist because in the advertisement, I rewatched the trailer for it. And like you said, they set up nothing about the comic book angle, but they do have a voiceover by Samuel Jackson. And it's like, don't you ever wonder why you never get sick or like all this stuff. So they're setting him up to be like a Professor X type character.
Right.
You think he's going to be that.
Right.
But it's like, what if Professor X was the arch villain?
Right.
So I think it works from that standpoint.
I'm okay with all of that.
Yeah.
It's just, it's that thing where in order to confirm who he is, he has to find out that he has an opposite, right? That there's a hero so he can be the villain. But I don't think the movie ever quite establishes this idea that he doesn't really know who he is. He's not the villain. Unless it's not like I have to find out why I do these horrible things like derail trains and blow up buildings.
Yeah.
He's doing those things to find out who he is. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so I don't feel like he's searching for himself. I mean, it's fine. I understand they're supposed to both be searching for themselves. But Samuel L. Jackson seems to come in fully formed, whereas David Dunn is not. And so let's talk about David Dunn real quick, because you had said you love his arc.
Yeah.
And I recognize that he has an arc because he goes from somebody who's unhappy to becoming a superhero who feels like he's fulfilling his place. And I like the Bruce Willis performance.
I do too.
I think maybe one of my... It's not even an issue with the movie. Again, I really like this movie.
Yeah.
But it's all pitched at the same level.
It is. But I would argue being a person who knows people who have been depressed, that's what they are like. They have that kind of even keel. They don't get too excited about things, and they almost feel like embarrassed or ashamed of feeling sad around other people, so they keep it all in, and they just kind of act down the middle, or as much as down the middle as they can, to avoid really any type of emotional catharsis. They just kind of act like straight down the line.
But would you agree that every single element of the movie is pitched at that same level?
It should be, then. If it's about his character, which it's predominantly about David Dunn,
right,
then the mood of the movie should follow suit of that character.
Including every other character in the movie?
See, you do have a point there. You absolutely have a point there. I think that's just like M. Night Shyamalan, though.
Okay.
That's just kind of his directing style. Because you could tell from like Signs, like the Joaquin Phoenix role and the Mel Gibson role, they talk very meticulously, and like there's no extra words and everything. It's just always like that.
Again, I don't have a huge problem with it. I just feel like it's one note, and it's a good note, and it, to some degree, it is to a purpose. But it is just one note. Hello there. There's
hello
wife coming downstairs.
With I'm witnessing magic.
You are.
Congratulations.
On the official magic scorecard.
This is happening
now. I'm so sorry to interrupt you guys, but
no
Erica
problem.
Has come down with birthday cake for Adam Riske.
Thank you.
Happy
it's my Scottie Pippen birthday.
Is it also Scottie Pippen's birthday?
No, it's just his number is 33, and I'm 33 today.
Oh.
Yeah, I've got 7 more years till I give up.
Wow. That's so weird because I gave up. before 33.
Really?
Yeah. Hi, thank you for the birthday cake.
Thank you so much.
If you leave a bite for me, I won't be mad.
Okay.
And
thanks.
Look, plates, napkins.
Yeah. Well, we can't really like cut it and serve it on the podcast, so this is going to be weird.
Is this the first cake on the podcast?
I mean,
there's cookies.
People think I'm kind of a beefcake. Does that? I don't know if that counts.
Yeah, it does.
It does. Okay, then no, this is not the first.
So this
cake.
Is like the 290th yeah. beefcake. One.
Yeah, there's a lot of cake. Okay. Do you want to cut it for us while we talk about Unbreakable? Would you mind?
Do you have anything to say about Unbreakable?
Yeah.
I remember liking it. And
does it like?
Glass.
Is there a song that you might
there's
sing
like
that's like?
Yeah. Is it
standing still and looking straight ahead?
That happened. That's you just literally described the whole movie. Okay. Actually,
what do you like more, the movie Unbreakable or the song Unbreakable by Alicia Keys?
I was thinking Unbreakable. Damn it, it's a miracle.
You guys Anyone? Are connected Anyone? At the brain.
We really are. That's why we're married.
Yeah.
I also brought you this fruit wine from a local winery.
Ooh.
Yes, top of the line.
I'm gonna smell it
Sugar
first.
Wine.
How's sangria. The bouquet?
It's
you guys,
sangria.
Hold on, you guys.
It's like a sangria wine.
It's actually Sangarita Mountain Dew. Have you seen that?
Nope.
There's Baja Blast Mountain Dew, which is delicious.
I was part of like a taste test for that once.
Well, you just fulfilled your purpose, yeah. David Dunn.
Which also explains why I can see in the future now.
There's Sangarita.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you guys want me to cut this upstairs? Wait, go back to that. And
we're talking about Unbreakable.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're making some good points. But I want to jump real quick. I know we were talking about David Dunn's arc, but we were talking
Thank
about
you,
the
Erica.
Scene where he saves the people in the thing.
Yep.
And you could or just write on that little table there if you want. It's up to you.
But you can't eat it while you're recording. Right?
Well, we might because it's a birthday show.
Just curious, is that plate glass?
They call this plate
Mr.
Glass.
Mr. Glass.
Yeah.
Sometimes in the movie, the style in which he shoots the movie, I find self-conscious and unnecessary.
Okay.
I'm thinking of this scene on the train where he's shooting Bruce Willis's conversation with the woman and it's kind of going back and forth through the seats. I'm not sure that there's a really good reason for shooting the scene that way.
I think there is.
Okay.
Okay. I'm getting this from IMDb trivia, so this isn't my original thought.
Posted by Lights, Camera, Jackson.
Oh my God! What isn't posted by Lights, Camera, Jackson? He's gonna be the guy who.
He's gonna be our Mr. Glass. He's gonna derail a train find our podcast and then take us down.
Bring it on, LCJ! I got a report card for you, buddy, and the grades aren't looking good. One thing that they were self-consciously doing in, because I agree, it is self-conscious, what they were doing is they were panning it as if you were reading a comic book. So as opposed to the Hulk panels
thing,
they're doing pans, so it's like, oh, I'm reading along at the comic book. Or like they have a lot of shots that are purposely to look like a frame from a comic book.
Sure.
Or a panel from a comic book.
Okay.
Like, one that springs to mind is when he falls on the tarp in the pool and they pan up, or they pull up, they dolly up, and you can see him, like, kind of surrounded by all this water and rain and stuff like that.
Thank you.
Adam gets the extra frosting. But
good. Yeah, no, the cake is served. We're going to eat this cake on the podcast. This is going to happen.
Should.
We don't really eat on the podcast ever.
Please don't get mad. It's just
but
a
it's Adam's birthday.
Thing, right?
I'm gonna finish the cake on the podcast.
We're talking about Unbreakable. Sometimes I think it's really good and interesting visual storytelling.
Yeah.
I think of the long scene that's in the trailer where the doctor is whispering what happened because everyone in this movie whispers in hushed tones.
He gets paid by the minute. Yeah.
And he's describing what's happening, and very much in the foreground, we see what we realize is a body on a gurney, and the blood is kind of slowly coming through the sheet, and we realize, oh, this person's going to die. And then the doctor actually makes reference to it and says, you know, that guy's going to die, at which point you'll be the only survivor of this train crash.
Yep.
But I think that's really good and interesting visual storytelling. Mm-hmm. I think the panning back and forth on the train, if he's going for something, okay. I might disagree that it totally works because I find that self-conscious. And there's only a few occasions where I feel like the style is calling attention to itself. This all goes back to the scene where he's saving the kids, because I love the fact that it's all done in one shot, because I love the fact that essentially his superpower is like, well, I can just hold on for longer until you pass out. Like, it goes and goes and goes. He's getting slammed into the wall and he's getting tossed around. But it reminds me of like that episode of The Simpsons where Homer's superpower is like you can shoot a bowling ball in his stomach.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
That's what it reminds me. Like, he could just withstand a great deal. And so he will just outlast the guy. Which I thought was really interesting, and I like how long he lets that go on instead of like the big fight scene that we get in so many superhero movies now. It's just this kind of understated thing. His superpower is just like, well, I won't fall off, so I'm going to choke you out.
One thing that I like about that, the whole, you know, I'm just going to choke you out, and that's his big move, that I really enjoy, and I'm going to quote or paraphrase.
Lights, camera.
Roger Ebert. Roger Ebert said that one thing that he enjoyed about the movie is that Shyamalan has observant everyday realism that he compared to Stephen King, where it kind of helps with the supernatural elements of it. I think Unbreakable benefits from that because I really enjoy that Bruce Willis's character is this street level superhero. And it's like the description in the art gallery towards the beginning of the movie where they show it's the picture that the boy Jeb was supposed to get. And it's just a black and white sketching of two superheroes. And it's not filled in with color. And it's just it's art. And it's not commercial because it's not a comic book. I think that's cool because that's what this movie's doing. It's the black and white version of what usually is a colorful comic book movie.
Yeah.
And that's something that just having that everyday realism to it is really cool to me. I mean, for lack of a better word, I just really dig that.
No, I 100% agree. And I had said this, I think, on the Signs podcast that we did 5 years ago. It was like one of our earliest shows. And I know people are very split on Signs. Some people really like it. A lot of people really hate it because they're like, why would they come to a planet with water? And my answer is always like, maybe they didn't know water kills them. Yeah. What I liked about Shyamalan's first three movies, and it's technically his first four, but I don't count Wide Awake because I've never seen it. Yeah. So we'll talk about Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, and Signs, is that I liked that he was taking these big high-concept genres and approaching them very much from a place of realism. So Sixth Sense is the ghost story, kind of the horror film. Like, what would that be like for real, like in real life? Unbreakable is the superhero movie. What would that be like in real life? Signs is the alien invasion movie. But what might that really be like if that were to happen? And I really like that approach. And then he kind of very quickly got away from that, which is fine. Yeah. I understand you can't be boxed in by like, that's going to be my thing.
Unfortunately, I think, not to go into Doc Hollywooding his career, but with those first three movies, Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, and Signs, the thing that I always come back to where I could watch all of them today and still really enjoy them is there's still that emotional heft to the story where it supersedes the twist. Like the twist, the twist is good and fine and everything like that, but whereas with The Village and with some of the other stuff, like, it doesn't resonate as much with me. And then especially by the time you get... So this is part one of his Water trilogy.
Oh.
It's Unbreakable.
All right.
Signs and Lady in the Water.
Oof.
Boom.
Oof.
Boom. Way to go out on a whimper.
Lady in the Water is rough.
Lady in the Water is one of the worst movies.
But I read a whole book that says if you don't like it, it's because you are wrong.
Was it The Man Who Sells Dreams or something?
The Man Who Heard Voices.
The Man Who Heard Voices.
Have you read it?
I read it, yeah.
Fascinating book.
Long time ago, yeah.
Book-length apology for Lady in the Water.
Yeah.
It's like, if you don't like it, it's you who is wrong. And if you do, it's, thank goodness, somebody bet on me, the genius.
Yeah, exactly. He's kind of insufferable.
Oh, yeah. So back to Unbreakable. I think it's interesting that this is now the second movie in a row where it's kind of the main character's dilemma. And we find out his dilemma is slightly larger. I liked the idea that he's trying to explain, like, well, how did you know that you were unhappy or whatever? And he's saying, like, I just felt like something's off. I don't know what it is, yeah, but something just feels off. And then that's fixed by the end of the movie. But that he's having marital problems again, mm-hmm, because we have that in The Sixth Sense. And we find out after the fact, of course, it's not just marital problems. He's dead. He just thinks that he's not communicating with his wife because he's not, because he's dead. Yeah. Spoilers for The Sixth Sense, everyone. Whoops. By the time we get to Signs, we don't even do the marital problems because we kill off the wife very early on.
Yeah.
Which is which is its own kind of marital problem.
One of the
wife is pinned to a tree and we're not communicating.
You seen Scary Movie 3, right?
Yeah, but okay. I don't remember it.
Okay. One of the hardest laughs I've ever had in a theater was from Scary Movie 3, which is the scene where they're making fun of Signs and they show the guy who's supposed to be M. Night Shyamalan, mm-hmm, and he goes, "Hey, Tom, could I get a ride home?"
That's funny.
That's very, very funny.
You were going to say, though. No?
That's what I was going to say.
That's what you were going to say. Okay.
On the LCJ report.
Do you, I mean, is it just a way of making him more unhappy and or miserable? Or is that his unhappiness infecting those things around him? I mean, what is the purpose of having them on the brink of divorce?
I think that now I'm getting to the point where I think I'm just being like an unbreakable apologist because I like it a lot.
Sure.
But if I had to ration that rationality, you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to come up with a reason for that, I would say that it has to do with the character. Really, it kind of grows out of that because he gave up being special for his wife because he was a star football player and he had physical gifts. And that's how he was expressing his superhero ability as basically being this amazing football player. And then he got into the car accident and he chose the woman. He chose to be in love and to have a marriage. And she was completely against that because she was a physical therapist and she didn't want to see bodies get broken down from football and everything.
It's the opposite
like that
of what she does.
Yeah. So he chose love over that. And because of that, she's been slowly killing him basically emotionally because he can't be himself because he's sacrificing himself for her.
Okay.
So that's what I got out of it. That's
all right. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know, but I also really like the line.
I don't disagree with it. I don't think it's bad. I'm just wanting to talk about it.
I really like the line, too, like when they go on that awkward first date in the middle of the movie, and she asks him why, when the first time he felt like there was trouble in their marriage, and he says it's when I had a nightmare and I didn't wake you up.
Yeah.
And I just think that's such it's an economical, and it's such a, I don't know, powerful line. Mm-hmm. Like, I just really like that moment.
No, for all of the things that I'm like, okay, but why this? You know, and there are a few of them in the movie. There's a way more that I'm like, oh, that's really cool. That really works. This is a movie made by somebody who was really confident. And confidence has never been his problem, although I would argue that once we get to Lady in the Water and The Happening, I mean, those movies are almost kind of drowning in flop sweat.
I love The Happening.
For real?
Not in an ironic way.
In an ironic way.
Yeah.
Because
it's fantastic.
Why you eyeing my lemon drink? But this movie is made by somebody who's super confident, and I like that. Am I remembering it wrong that the flashback, which I don't think the flashback to the crash is super well handled, just in terms of the way it's shot. Although I marvel at, I assume they're digital creations, but I don't think they are. The casting that they did for the young Bruce Willis and the young
Robin Wright
is uncanny. It's nuts. Do we come right out of that flashback into that shot of him carrying her up the stairs?
No.
Okay.
That happens towards the end of the movie after he comes home.
That's what it is. Yeah. I'm sorry.
After he comes home from saving the kids.
Yes. But I love that shot of him carrying her up the stairs.
It's great. It's great.
And there's a shot where it feels like it's out of a comic book panel and it has movement to it.
Yeah.
And it's telling a story visually. I was marveling at how much of the movie really does do visual storytelling. Even the scene of him lifting the weights with his kid, there is some dialogue, how much is it, you know, and but we get to the paint cans. You could take all the sound out of that movie, out of that scene, and the scene still works.
I love, love, love that scene.
It's a really good scene.
The reason actually why I even mentioned, hey, let's do a podcast on Unbreakable is because of that scene. It's because I was in my building. Because
you've been lifting, bro.
I have been lifting. I was in my building and I saw the Unbreakable is on AMC and it was that scene. It was that scene. And nothing gets you more pumped to lift than the scene where he's lifting weights in Unbreakable, because it's like, how much more weight can I put on it? And then I fucking tweaked my back and I was out of commission for like 4 days.
Oh, you are so breakable.
I had to do 2 work from home days. How many days did David Dunn miss? He didn't miss any, and that's why he got a raise. And then I was like at CDW, I was just like, oh shit, that's where I work. And then at work, I was like, hey, how many days have I missed? And they're like, you just missed 2. They're like, and then they kicked me in the tailbone, and I'm like, that's where it hurts.
Let's talk about Samuel Jackson real quick.
Who's actually giving a performance.
His stuff is so great in the movie. I think he has such a good character to play, and I think he plays him so well. And I would... if he were to stylize that same character in 2015 the way that he does, I would call bullshit. Yeah. Because now, you know, even Kingsman, I just feel like so much of his performance is like, well, I wear this hat and I have this lisp. And
He was trying to do like Russell Simmons, I heard.
Yeah, which, okay, that's weird and interesting, but whatever. he's turning in one of these actors where like it's the costume and the affect before anything else. Well, Old Boy was one where it was right, it's a costume. You're not a character, you're just a costume. But I think the purple coat and the Frederick Douglass hair, like, I think all that stuff works because it's just this side of cartoonish, right? Like, you could get away with it because it's almost believable. I love that first scene of him being born, essentially. I think that is so well done. And again, I thought about seeing this movie for the first time. You get that comic book stuff, okay. But again, not knowing what the movie is about, and that's the opening scene. It's like, what is going on? What is this movie? Yeah, super interesting. Mm-hmm. All the stuff with him as a kid. I think every one of his scenes is good and interesting.
I really like his scenes when he's a kid where they show him reflected in the glass and everything. And
well, they call him Mr. Glass.
They do?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. He has a
cane that's glass. At one point it falls and it breaks, and the breaking
because
of the
glass. It's breakable.
It's symbolic.
Cause it's
symbolizing. He's breakable. David Dunn.
I get it.
Unbreakable.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Are you starting to turn around on this, LCJ?
No. I am still not convinced.
What will convince you? God damn it.
3 gumdrops.
Wait, are gumdrops good or bad, LCJ? I'm so confused by your rating system.
They're fantastic. real quickly, a digression. My friends, whenever I see a movie now, they're like, how many Riskies would you give it? So I'm just like, I really, because of LCJ.
What is the scale, though? How many?
It's 0 to 4.
It's the four classic possible riskies.
Classic 0 to 4.
Doug and I once came up with this idea of everything getting 3 stars, but the scale of how many stars are possible changes. Sometimes it's 3 out of 4. Sometimes it's 3 out of 10. But everything gets 3.
I got to give a shout out to a specific LCJ video. There is an LCJ video where it's 12
two
days.
LCJs, one cup.
It's the 12. Oh my God. He's just a boy. It's the 12 days of Christmas, and he's like, on the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me Chef on DVD. On the second day of Christmas, my true love gave to me The Fault in Our Stars and Chef on DVD. You guys need to subscribe to LCJ on YouTube. Oh my God.
I'm anti-bullying, but... for sure that kid gets picked on, right?
He has to.
No one should be excited about getting Chef on DVD.
Yeah, not even on Blu-ray.
No?
Nope, he got on Divid.
Wow, that is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So a couple things I wanted to make sure we talked about.
All right.
Did you ever see the Screen Junkies episode where Patton Oswalt was on it talking about his dream sequel, and it was sequels to Unbreakable?
No.
Okay. So he wants it to be a trilogy.
Sure. And his pitch, everything is.
His pitch was the second movie was called, and I want to get your impression on what, if you think this is a good idea. I hate it. I think.
You've colored my judgment.
I'm sorry. Let well enough alone. I like Unbreakable the way it is. Yeah. I don't need to know more about this story.
Probably not.
So he wanted part two to be called Unbreakables, where...
That's a joke, right?
No. Where Bruce Willis finds out, because Elijah Price presumably is following all these other Unbreakables, and Bruce Willis collects all this data and says, I need to find more people like me. And they form a super team of Unbreakables.
Shouldn't there not be other people like him?
Well, he hasn't. You would think from the movie that you just watched that there weren't.
Right.
More
I thought the whole point was that Samuel Jackson kept looking and then found the one, right?
Don't shoot the messenger. So
I don't like that. Listen, yeah. Patton Oswalt, you're a fine person. But this idea of just always adding the S to the sequel, like, yeah, is not always. I get it. It worked in Aliens. Everyone, yeah, swell, but that's not always the answer.
Yeah, and then the third part was going to be the big clash between Elijah Price and David Dunn, where they throw down, where I guess Elijah Price breaks out of the prison, and then he also mentions, it's like, and he could do a blood transfusion, and Elijah Price could become unbreakable. And it's just like, oh no, this supervillain's taking away my power and stuff like that. And when I'm listening to it, I'm just like, this sounds terrible. Sounds awful.
I don't like any of that.
Okay.
No. I don't like any of that.
On the third day of Christmas, my true love gave to me Animaniacs on DVD.
Is that really day three?
No, I don't remember what day three was. I know Chef on DVD was day one.
Well, that's got to be, because then you get to sing it 12 times.
It was one of
times.
Those things where, like, I felt like it was bullying just watching it.
Exactly. I know, us talking about it and me, like, laughing at this kid.
Yeah.
It's probably not nice, but no. Oh, man.
Yeah, I feel.
Oh, man. No, I don't like those ideas. Do I think that a sequel is possible? Maybe.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's necessary.
I don't think so either. And I think that
I think it would rob this movie of a little bit of its charm, which is just that it's this origin story for a story that we don't need to know the rest of the story, you know? Like,
and I'm scared what Shyamalan would do with it.
Well, I think no matter what, he would go bigger. You almost have to, because now you've established a world where there are superheroes and supervillains. So now you are playing very much in this big comic book sandbox, and that robs the movie of its charm, right? The whole idea is that these are regular people existing in the real world. By the way, I really like the photography and the locations in the movie. I really like the way he shoots Philadelphia in this movie.
Yeah, definitely. It has a lot of personality.
And I like the score a lot, too.
Very good
score.
With
the exception of the opening credits, where it's got kind of like a drum machine thing behind it.
Yeah.
That sucks, and I don't like that.
Yeah, that is weird.
But I like the rest of the score, and every
James
time the theme...
Newton Howard.
Yeah, every time the theme comes up, I'm like, hey, cool, this works. But then when I was watching it yesterday and I got to that opening title sequence, I was like, wait, I thought I remembered liking the score to this movie. This is garbage. This sounds like the backing vocal to a Sade song.
What's wrong with that?
It's not what I want from my...
That's my birthday.
Unbreakable.
That's my birthday. I take the walk of sadness, then I go home. I light candles.
Listen to Sade.
Listen to Sade.
Which Sade song?
Ordinary Love.
Yeah.
That's the only one that I know.
Smooth Operator?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
But Ordinary Love, that's the Indecent Proposals song?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then
great movie, by the way.
And then I get out a hand mirror and I'd be like, can I sleep with your wife for $1 million? And it's just me. It's like me playing every part in the trailer. I just do the trailer for Indecent Proposal.
I think Robin Wright is really good in the movie, but I think she has
she's very mannered, but like it's not her fault.
Well, I think she has kind of a thankless part.
Yeah.
Like, unfortunately, she exists just to be like the wife who's like, why won't you talk to me? And
she's got a good scene where like she asks him if he's been seeing other people.
Yeah.
And he says no. And then she just does this like silent cry thing.
Right.
I love silent cries.
She gives a good performance. Yeah. I just wish she was less of a prop for him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And more of like her own person.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But I would argue he does not write women particularly well.
No, because I'm thinking, all right, so there's Toni Collette, which is not bad.
Pretty good, actually.
Yeah, she was
in her few scenes.
Was she nominated for an
I believe
Oscar?
She was. I believe she was.
I hope she won that Oscar.
She did not. I'm sad to say.
Boo. Okay, so Robin Wright and then Abigail Breslin.
Does that count?
No. Bryce Dallas Howard, who's... I hate that woman's acting. I don't hate her, but I just...
I would argue that she might be one of the best parts about The Village, though. But, yeah. To be fair,
yeah.
I don't think I've seen it since opening night. So.
That's one of the two times I've ever seen a movie in the theaters, and I've led a chorus of boos.
You led the chorus? Yeah. What was the other one?
The Ring 2.
Oh, I never saw The Ring 2. I don't like The Ring 1.
The Ring 2 has a scene where a CGI deer starts running at, like a pack of CGI deer starts running at their car. And I was just like, this is shitty. One of the biggest, I used to do that every once in a while when I was younger, like in my late teens, early 20s. And to my benefit, or to my credit, like I always killed with the lines that I shouted out.
Well, that's good.
Like, I remember during Boys and Girls with Freddie Prinze Jr. and
Don't
Claire
you worry.
Forlani.
Saw that in the theater.
Yeah, there was a scene where like Claire Forlani kissed Amanda Detmer.
I barely remember.
And I was just like, it's about time. And everybody, like, it was like...
Were there more than seven people in the theater?
People were throwing popcorn in the air. They were that excited about my line reading.
How many people were in the theater?
It was at least 8.
I thought there were only 10 of us who saw the movie. I thought we were the specials, like the Unbreakables.
We were.
The people who've seen Boys and Girls.
We surely were.
Yeah.
Where would you rank that in the Freddie Prinze Jr. canon?
Boys and Girls?
Yeah.
It would require me to think about his other movies. I don't even know what I would put near the top, honestly.
Probably She's All That, right?
I guess.
Did you hear that for Summer Catch?
Which I saw.
He was so bad at pitching that every shot of him pitching is actually a different guy.
No, I did not hear
like
that.
Like, they couldn't salvage any of his
Why
pitching.
Cast him, then?
Because he was a matinee idol.
I mean, it's not
it
like...
Was it was one of his vehicles, I believe.
It's not, it was, but yeah. It's not like he brought the charisma everywhere else. We're like, listen, we gotta have that Prinze charm. We just can't have that Prinze arm. Yeah. And I have been Lights, Camera, Jackson, everyone.
My favorite Prinze song is Soft and Wet. Soft and Wet. That's
I heard a story from Lexi Alexander who said
from Punisher Warzone?
Yeah, that Freddie Prinze came in to read for Jigsaw, the Dominic West part, and crushed it. She said he was so good. And I think the studio said we're not going with him, but she said he would have been amazing.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, right?
I want him to have a comeback. He seems like an amiable fellow.
Yeah.
All right. There was a couple other things I definitely wanted to
Let's have
talk
it.
About. So Quentin Tarantino really loves this movie.
Yeah, but he also loves anything else, the Woody Allen movie. So.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Okay, that's
I
got.
No, I like this. I like the movie a lot, and I know he had ranked it like one of the 10 best superhero movies ever.
He said it was one of the top 20 movies of the since 1992 when
oh,
he started
that's
directing.
Right. Which I love Quentin Tarantino, but like movies didn't start when you started directing. So just
a little bit.
Stop it.
A little bit.
Stop it.
In fact, I started in the year that I was born.
1997? No.
1990.
2002.
I don't know.
He was probably born after Unbreakable came out.
I am relieved I don't know what year Lights, Camera, Jackson was born.
This movie was made before he was born.
They call me Mr. Jackson.
I wonder. I mean, I would probably rank the movie in, like, if I was doing, like, a top 10 kind of superhero movies, yeah. I feel like I would put it in there. And yeah. I wonder how much of that is just because it is so different from all the other ones that we've seen, you know what I mean? That are like so kind of the Marvel model, the costumes and all that. Like this one is very much its own thing. And mm-hmm. so I feel like it stands apart. Even if I don't think it 100% works, I feel like I would include it on the list just for its novelty.
Yeah, this is inching its way up. I'd say it's my top five. I would. The all only right. ones that come to mind right away are the first two Spider-Man movies for me,
yeah.
and then Dark Knight. And okay. then I would probably put Unbreakable maybe all four.
Right. So what's five? Rise of the Silver Surfer.
I guess Batman Begins.
Okay.
Or maybe Winter Soldier. I really like... Or
that was good.
Yeah, I watched that a second time and liked it even more than I did the first time.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
Yeah, it's fun.
Unbreakable. Is this your favorite Shyamalan movie?
I'd have to go back and rewatch Signs and Sixth Sense. I think it's still Sixth Sense.
Okay. What's your least favorite Shyamalan movie?
Least favorite would... I've never seen The Last Airbender.
But I haven't seen After Earth.
I know, you did a show on that.
It's one of the...
After Earth is not the worst. The Happening is probably the worst, but I get so much enjoyment out of it that I have...
Yeah.
So I think Lady in the Water is just... It's just the one where it's bad, but it's not bad in a fun way.
Right. It's a mess.
And I think half of The Village works until the reveal, and then the reveal completely falls in on itself.
Well, and that's my problem with The Village. Again, I liked the idea of treating that like it was a real thing. Like, what if this was a... You know what I mean? Like, what? It's done, period, obviously, but, like, why not say, okay, this is what happens, these monsters come out, and, like, this is what we have to do to deal with it. That's an interesting story to me, and one worth exploring, not, like, I don't want to spoil The Village, but I don't. The direction that they went with it, I was not crazy about.
No, I didn't like it.
And the Adrian Brody performance and character alone are almost enough to put that movie
off
in the shit pile. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you like it? Well, I won't say there's no way that you're like a fan of M. Night Shyamalan's acting. There can't be.
Correct.
But like, do you think that he's obnoxious with his cameos and you wish he would stop?
A little bit. It didn't really, I don't think, get horrible. Like in
Lady in the Water, it was real bad.
And that's the one that kills it for me. Although The Village is pretty awful, right? Doesn't he have the punchline?
Does he? Well, he's the park ranger guy.
Yeah, isn't he the one who
was
like...
What is the punchline again?
Like, fucking white people? No. What does he say? It's like, maybe that was in an early draft. There's a... Where he has, like, a punchline where he kind of rolls his eyes and it's like, bop, 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 bop. Lady in the Water is the one that is like, oh,
God.
No.
The hubris on that motherfucker.
Exactly.
It was... I'm not the writer or I'm not the person who's going to save the world. I'm the person who's going to inspire the person that saves the world.
Yeah.
Which is unbelievable. I almost want to give him a pat on the back just to like, just for the sheer chutzpah. That's a Jewish word.
Last Airbender to me is the worst because it's bad in such a dull and lifeless way. Like Lady in the Water is a mess, but I think there's some scenes where Paul Giamatti kind of hits on something.
He's all like, pop, 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 Popeye's chicken.
The photography is nuts, but sometimes it's interesting. Like, there's enough. There are so many bad ideas in that movie, though. The working out half the body and like, oh, God, there's some stuff in that movie that is disastrous.
Yeah.
And The Village is, not The Village, The Happening is like spectacularly bad
and so funny.
Funny, right, exactly. Yeah. But Last Airbender, you get zero enjoyment out of.
Yeah,
zero.
Exactly.
But anyway, I hope this was fun for your birthday.
It was, yeah. This was a great way to cap it off, and I hope this was fun for you guys listening.
I hope it was fun as well. As always, you can find our website at fthismovie.net. Follow us on Twitter. We are at fthismovie. We have June Sploitation starting, I think, next week.
Yeah, I'm really pumped.
By the time we come back, we will be all up in June Sploitation. So check fthismovie.net for more details about that. You can like our page on Facebook, facebook.com/fthismovie. Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Find us in the iTunes store, on Stitcher. Leave a review if you haven't already. We always appreciate it. Thank you guys very much for listening. LCJ, you want to take us out?
So the podcast is over. I'm just going to wheel you out. You can think about this on the sidewalk because I got to get some chicken in me.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.